and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Mark Schindler is with me. I'm live from a Houston hotel room where after 19 hours of plane rides over the course of the last 36 hours or so, my body has borderline recovered. Not really. I'm like barely functional right now. But we're here. We're going to talk about the NBA. We're going to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves. Having Karl Anthony Towns back, they're at full strength. We're going to talk how they've won four consecutive games here, including games against the Kings and Warriors back-to-back, and whether or not we buy them as a real NBA playoff contender in some respect, given how wide open the West is. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the news that Shams Charania reported earlier today, that Kristaps Porzingis is in potential contract extension negotiations with the Washington Wizards. Kristaps has been actually really good this year, and I think it's worth explaining how that has occurred. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the sixth man of the year race and Emmanuel Quickley, and why Emmanuel Quickley has emerged as the favorite in a awards race that has weirdly become this touchstone that fans seem to be up in arms about. Boston fans versus New York fans. I can see a reason why there would be some real friction with this, but nonetheless, it is a thing that's happening. So we do want to talk a little bit about that race and about Emmanuel Quickley particularly. And then finally, we're going to close a little bit on the Lakers, the Austin Reeves jump, Anthony Davis playing incredibly well, what they look like potentially with LeBron coming back, everything like that. Mark, now that I've done that intro, how you doing, man?
Oh, it has been a week so far, and it is Wednesday. So yeah, you know, yeah. It's typical March. We're almost all the way through it. Final Four coming up this weekend, which I'm also not ready for that, but we're one step at a time, man.
I'm in Houston and I'm not ready for the Final Four, Mark. I'm ready, man. I'm ready for these games to happen. I'm ready for college basketball to be over in some respect. Just so I can like really start diving into draft tape, like with everybody's profiles closed. You know what I mean? Like have all of the data points and then go back and really dive into them. That's what I'm ready for. These actual games that are going to occur, like, you know, a stone's throw away from me in this beautiful hotel I'm in, you know, not ready for those, not ready for those at all. But we're not here to talk about the Final Four, although I might ask Mark at the end for some picks. We're going to talk about the Wolves first. The Minnesota Timberwolves, they have won four consecutive games. They've beaten the New York Knicks by six, beat the Hawks by one, beat the Warriors by three, and then beat the Kings by four. They beat those three playoff teams, the Kings, Warriors, and Knicks, on the road. And in two of those games, Karl Anthony Towns was back. That was against the Warriors and against the Hawks. He did not play in that game against the Kings. It was the second night of a back-to-back, and the team decided to sit him. What is your overall impression of the Karl Towns Minnesota Timberwolves now that we're starting to see them in a more fully operational manner? Because early in the season, it felt like everyone was still trying to figure things out role-wise. They did not have Mike Conley at that point. It felt like there was just a lot of different things happening that did not lead to success for the Karl Towns Rudy Gobert combination. But now that Jaden McDaniels has emerged, they have more of a table setting point guard. Maybe it feels like this ecosystem could be a little bit better for success now.
Yeah. I think off of everything with Kat coming back, I'm still trying to get a better grasp on what I feel with him there. I think from what we've seen so far in the two games he's played, I've been mostly like happy with it. Like obviously he played a lot better in the first game than he did in the second game, missed the Kings game. But he hit clutch free throws in the first game, hit a big shot against the Warriors, which was absolutely pivotal in them winning that game. It kind of just feels like the aggression that we've seen from him has been exactly what they've needed and what I wanted to see. Like part of what was missing in that offense, it felt like, was just having somebody other than than Ant, who could do those things. And there's more that we're going to talk about, obviously, with throughout the roster. But it helps, too, because they've been really starting to find things in March. Even if it hasn't always resulted in wins, I do think that they've found more consistent ways to do things in a winning way. And I think Cat is really piecing that together. A lot's just going to be how do they, you know, continue to make everything work together defensively. But I think from what we've seen on the offensive side of the ball, I'm pretty optimistic about what this is going to look like over the next couple of weeks.
It's really interesting because these lineups that they're putting out with Cat, like particularly their starting lineup, that's like a big group. You know what I mean? Like this game, for instance, against Atlanta, right? Like they started Karl Anthony Towns, Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, Jaden McDaniels, Kyle Anderson. Like that's a huge group of dudes. Like Anthony Edwards not playing that game, but like that's 6'9" Jaden McDaniels, 6'8" with like a 7'2" wingspan, Kyle Anderson. And then you're going 2 7-footers and Karl Towns and Rudy Gobert. Like that's just a lot of floor coverage. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that is just a lot of guys like being around. And frankly, like those lineups, that starting lineup did not play super well defensively in that game. Like they gave up a 122 defensive rating, but they absolutely wrecked worlds offensively. It felt like they scored almost every time down the court. And what I'm intrigued by is exactly what you said. They now have multiple ball handlers in Mike Conley and Anthony Edwards. In theory, they have a guy in Karl Anthony Towns who can go get a bucket when necessary and can take some pressure off of Anthony Edwards, because while Mike Conley, I think, has been very underrated as a pick and roll playmaker this year, he isn't necessarily a go get you a bucket guy. And I think they needed one more of those. And while I think you and I both want to talk about Jaden McDaniels and some of the strides that he has made over the course of the season, I think I'm intrigued by this while also still recognizing that there are going to be distinct playoff matchups that can probably cause Towns Gobert lineups problems. Where do you stand on that? And then I want you to give me your excitement about Jaden McDaniels, because there is nothing better than Mark Schindler being excited about a player.
Yeah. I think what in reference to talking about the lineups, I do think like that's something that I am, of course, interested to see what that means playoff wise. But I think in terms of what it's actually looked like for me the last couple of weeks, it's finally felt like the first time that they've been able to play big and have it feel that way in March for me. And I think a lot of that has been, it's hard to dissolve J-Mac in this situation because he has been a really big part of it. I just wrote about this today. Like, it's less that I think he's taking a leap. It's more that he's like found a new role and niche kind of within the offense that has really been huge for him. Like, even if you just look at the Kings game, look at the Hawks games that they've played, they played the Hawks twice in March. And the teams are trying to put their worst defenders on him throughout the year. That's been the thing. Okay, we're going to put our worst defender on this guy who is mainly just taking threes and cutting and get away with it. And off rip, they were like, okay, we're going to run pick and roll at Trae Young through Jaden McDaniels, or we're going to post you up on Trae Young. Like there was a possession that stood out to me where, you know, they run a secondary pick and roll with empty with J-Mac and Rudy Gobert, obviously, against Trae and Clint Capella. Trae gets under him, which that is like J-Mac is like so not bursty whatsoever. That's one of the things he struggled with. Trae gets up under him a little bit, actually shows some defensive effort. J-Mac kicks to the corner, but then he reposts on Trae. Clint Capella is not right there, so it's just him isolated on Trae. Gets the ball back from Kyle Anderson, goes right up with it, bucket. And that's been kind of the thing for me that has been missing for him, like that assertiveness. Like part of what we talk about in off-ball players or guys who aren't necessarily creating their own offense, like he's up to, I think, like around 19% usage in March, and like none of it is coming from self-created stuff. Like, I mean, some of it is, but most of it is find your own usage, like find ways to be impactful, move without the ball, be aggressive in finding ways to attack. And I think that's been really huge for the offense as a whole, because like we're talking about, like, part of the reason they've struggled to play big and actually impact the court in that way is that their offense doesn't get guarded in a way that makes it easy to. And I think, like, I will have playoff questions for sure. Like, that's stuff he's going to need to show out with. Like, granted, like, exactly. Like, you take what he did in that game and then, okay, look at what he did against Golden State. Like, he struggled in that game. He fouled out in 9 minutes of play. Part of that was obviously a lot of that's on the defensive end, but also he wasn't super impactful offensively. But the point is, I think we're hitting a point now where it's like, okay, well, we can't just hide our worst defender on Jaden McDaniels. We have to have somebody who actually gives him problems. And that opens things up more for Anthony Edwards, and that makes it a little bit easier on Mike Conley. And that just opens up more and more. And I think that is so huge in what they're doing and what they're trying to move towards. Because again, like, all right, well, you have one of the five best perimeter defenders in basketball in Jaden McDaniels, who can stay on the court more because of what he's starting to bring offensively. Like, the shot has just been consistent. Like, he was pretty wayward in the first month of the season. I think he shot like 30-31% from three. And then since then, he shot like 39% every single month, shooting 40% in the month of March from deep. That's been huge, man. Like, you can't undersell when you have a guy who's 6'10 that can put the ball on the floor once or twice, get to the rim, has the touch to shoot intermediate shots if somebody does get up under him. It's not like a perfect formula. I think he's still like learning the secondary passes. I think we've seen more from him that is good with that and continuing to move the ball instead of the possessions, either going in or out of the basket with him. So that's been really good to see. Like, I think that's been a really huge development for them that has kind of gone under the radar because like we're talking about, like, guys have been out. I think when you're talking about lineup versatility in the playoffs, I have like a little bit more, it'll definitely be team dependent. Cause again, if we're talking about a team that really has multiple defenders who they can put on, we have like our second best wing defender, somebody who's capable of defending J-Mac, or, you know, we don't have to worry about like taking somebody off who would be defending Anthony Edwards to defend Jaden McDaniels. Like, I think regardless, like it just adds another,
like I'm worried about the Clippers with that.
Yeah.
Right. Like the Clippers have multiple wing defenders. They're going to be able to throw on to Anthony Edwards, onto Jaden McDaniels. We know that they're just basically going to let Rudy Gobert like fend for himself out in space and play five out and well spaced out. But they're going to do that with two guys now. Like, they're going to play five out, and then both Towns and Gobert are going to be out there then. Like, that's a real matchup concern for me that we'll have to see if that happens in the playoffs. Like, that could go very poorly, I think, if they end up playing the Clippers. But part of what I find really interesting almost is inverting that a little bit. So, like, we're talking about, like, oh, yeah, Mike Conley's on the floor, Anthony Edwards is on the floor, all these guys. What if you take Mike Conley off the court and you go Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Kyle Anderson, Towns, and Gobert, and you just go enormous across the board, right? Because the thing that Jaden McDaniels can actually do that is interesting is guard at the point of attack. And that ability to guard at the point of attack will then take the stress off of Anthony Edwards, which is interesting, free him up to guard, you know, the second best guard, have him guard, you know, maybe a wing that is a little bit less inclined. Or if it's Kyle Anderson, then maybe, like, if it's Kyle Anderson on the court, you want to have him on like maybe a bit of a slower player or someone he can help off of, so he can use his length and be a little bit rangy and help defense. Or maybe you try and put Gobert on the worst player on the opposing team and just let him free reign and roam. And then you have Karl Towns guard the center if the center is a little bit more of a potential option, right? So, you know, if you're playing Denver, for instance, you probably want to line up with, frankly, like, I think you'd want to go Towns on Jokic, which sounds bad, but then you would have Gobert on Aaron Gordon, and you basically dare Aaron Gordon to shoot, and then have Gobert as like your help side defender to be able to like help on to Jokic, even though Jokic is a killer passer and you never really want to double him necessarily, but you do at least want to have help there in case he like completely collapses the paint. So it's like intriguing, the fact that they can go super enormous and try and just cut down angles for some of these teams, and then on offense still maintain the skill to be able to create shots.
Yeah, it's funny because I think in really thinking about it, what's so fun, like, to me, like, the team that I would not want them to see is obviously Phoenix. Like, I think they would really struggle with Phoenix.
Yeah. I think that'd be an immense problem.
Yeah, I think that they would really struggle with the Warriors. And I actually, I would probably pick the Kings in a series against them, just with how much they can move. Like, I think even in that matchup, the Wolves ended up winning, but I think you saw a lot of the things that they can do to give them problems. But I think when you're talking about, like, I actually kind of like them in a series against the Clippers, if we're being honest. Like, I don't know if I would pick them, but I just, like, in terms of it being what, like, we're talking about with their ability to play functional with size against an offense that really doesn't put the fear of God in you driving into the teeth of the paint, especially with, you know, PG. You know, we're not going to know what he looks like coming back from injury. I hope everything's okay with him. But, again, like, even with, like, I love the Nuggets. I think the Nuggets are really, really good. But they just still have so many non-shooting threats or guys that I'm not very worried about, especially with what the bench is right now. Like, part of what is so interesting to me in this Wolves team is, as much as they have struggled this year and been in kind of the downfall of their own expectations, by virtue of how much they have just fucked around with their lineups, I feel like they really have found things that are going to be important for them towards the end of the year. Like, obviously, you can counter that and be like, okay, well, what if things just don't click with Kat? And that is a very fair point. But also, I think, like, I just have had less issues with their bench lineups this year than really anything. A lot has been, like, they're able to find lineups that work in the moment. I think Chris Finch has been really good at that. It just has always come down to having a starting lineup that works. And honestly, their starting lineup has really worked in March. Like, it's been obviously without Kat, but it's, like, Conley, Edwards, Anderson, J-Mac, and Rudy. It's been fantastic. Like, they've really been a lot better at finding Rudy in the paint. They've been better. To be fair, it's not just like them not finding him. Like, he, as you know, like, he does some stuff with the ball where it's just like, whoa, what is happening here? Like, he took a fadeaway against the Kings. It went in, but it was one of the
Kings bench was very upset that ball went in.
So were my eyes. But,
so to speak to your point though, Mike Conley, Kyle Anderson, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Rudy Gobert, those lineups in March have played 9 games together. 129.2 offensive rating, 107.6 defensive rating. That's just, like, absolutely outstanding across the board in every way. And, oh, by the way, the second most used lineup in March is actually Mike Conley, Torian Prince, Kyle Anderson, Jaden McDaniels, Rudy Gobert. So you're basically replacing Anthony Edwards for Torian Prince. In their 126 offensive rating, 99 defensive rating in those minutes. Like, I agree with you 100% on the bench units, particularly, like, again, in March, you look at this random little, like, Kyle Anderson, Jordan McLaughlin, Torian Prince, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Naz Reid lineup. You would think that lineup should get absolutely blown off the face of the court, and they don't. Like, they've been okay during the month. Like, they've won their minutes by 20. It's been limited minutes, but, like, you look at the way they've experimented. I think that because they have experimented as much as they have, you're right, they're in a pretty good spot to really mess around a little bit here.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think, you know, just going to more of the point in general with having Kat back, I don't know. Like, obviously I want to see how things really play out. And what that continues to look like. But I just have a level of confidence in it, which maybe I'm wrong in that. But I just keep looking at that. And, like, I think a lot of what they were missing is what he brought. And I think it's so fun, too, because, like, Naz Reid, like, we just got to praise Naz Reid for a second. Like,
I kind of want to close on Naz Reid because he has been just phenomenal.
Like, that, he legitimately was almost the best player in the Kings game. It was crazy, man. Like, they had no answer for him. Because obviously, like we've talked about the Kings and their defense. Like, I think their defense is a lot more about just trying to limit certain things and living with the consequences because of what their roster is. Naz Reid is there to punish whoever your backup big is. Like, there is just, like, his ability to face up and drive, and that he has uncorked just some absolutely monster dunks this year. Like, I think he has my favorite dunk highlight reel of the season if we're putting them all together. I can't say enough about him. And the defense really has been, like, steadily pretty solid. Like, he's somebody who really benefits from playing alongside a lot of other big players, you know, cutting down what he has to do, not necessarily playing in drop as much. And he's just been a joy to watch.
Well, Well, yeah, he like it feels like to me his sneaky been pretty good at the level of the screen, and like has been pretty okay when they've had to switch him like out onto guards. Like he's not a great rim protector in my opinion, but he moves his feet like pretty. His feet are fluid; they're not like fast. You know what I mean? Like he is always on balance. It feels like to me defensively, even if sometimes like he will get burnt. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I totally agree with that.
Which is a big part of it. So yeah, Naz Reid is in position here to like really make some money this offseason. Like he is. Would it surprise you if someone gave him the full mid level? So like 450?
I think he probably gets more than that, honestly. I would imagine some team is going to be willing to do that, just based on what the play has been and how, because like even with the like the shot's been like fine this year, hasn't been anything amazing, but I still think like you can look at him and legitimately be like, all right, well, what happens if we're playing you 30 minutes a game? Right. I do think some team will bite on that.
To pay him more than the mid-level, you have to see him as a genuine starting center. I think it's possible someone looks at him like that. It's not impossible that could happen, but you know, that's down the road. The Wolves are in a really interesting spot. It feels like they are at least somewhat back. I think they're streaking at the right time. They're hot. They've gotten real role allocation for guys like Kyle Anderson, like Jaden McDaniels. Goodness. It's been a long couple days. And now that Carl Towns is back, I hope that he is more easy to integrate now that it feels like the role players have better roles around that. Been absolutely tremendous. And NBA Rigged here in the comments is asking, can you guys talk about Kyle Anderson's impact on the team? I mean, Kyle Anderson's impact in just being a secondary playmaker for this team has been enormous. Like his ability to move the ball, his ability to just keep the offense in flow. I noticed it a lot more actually when D'Angelo Russell was there, to be honest. Like there were just times where he was running point. Now that Conley's there, it feels like that is happening a bit less often, but his ability to just consistently move the ball and make the right decision every single time is just absolutely enormous for this Wolves team.
Yeah, I mean, exactly what I kind of like I alluded to a little bit on that play with J-Mac against the Hawks. Like a lot of it is he just makes good decisions. He moves the ball right. And he's just such an interesting blend because I honestly feel like obviously they're not the same, but there are like similarities you can draw between him and Jaden in terms of just like how herky jerky and funky they are. And I think that's, they just have really tough skill sets to guard. Like I mentioned with Jaden, and just like starting to find something, like he's a really fun foil to Ant because Ant is obviously like, you know, so much power and speed and the way that he is able to attack people with his first step. And Jaden's all like, okay, he uses your momentum against you. Like he's really elite at finding hips and finding angles. And it's very similar to like kind of what Kyle does, obviously with a little bit more athleticism. You know, in terms of just having guys who can continue plays now, because like you're talking about, like Kyle was so pivotal early in the season because it felt like he was the only player who could keep a play going, like outside. Because obviously, like Ant's vision hadn't really started to pop yet, like we really hadn't seen any growth from him as a playmaker. It was kind of just D'Lo, and whenever they had a backup guard in. And I think when you have like all these guys who are capable of running offense and not a lot of guys who are like a lot of guys who can finish plays, not a lot of guys who can start them. And then it's just a lot of in between. There was no in between. I think having Kyle as like the one guy who could really link plays was so important for them early in the year. And now having like again, like we're talking about with Jaden, like having a guy who is like, I didn't even mention that enough about him. Like his body control has been so huge. Like he really, like last year, it felt like half his fouls were offensive fouls because he was just kind of bull in a china shop on drives. Like there's a lot of travels, a lot of like just like really choppy. Like it just didn't feel comfortable. And now it kind of feels like he's just figured it out. Like the, okay, I'm going to pause for a half second, but in a good way, read the defense, see what I need to do next. Really, everything from him is counters. Like everything is all counter based. And again, that's where you have issues when you have like a defender who can just stay in front of him and be like size. But it's the same thing of, okay, I'm going to read, I'm going to make the right play, I'm going to keep it going. And that just makes me a lot more confident in what they can do as a team, having multiple guys who can do that.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to jump in to a potential extension for Kristaps Porzingis. Here we are. Kristaps Porzingis is in contract extension negotiations with the Washington Wizards. I've seen some pushback to this from Washington fans, from the internet, just saying that like this is more of the same Wizards, more of them just like continuing to go down the road of being a 500 team and trying to chase the seven seed and all this stuff. Depending on what the number is here, I kind of think this might end up being okay. And here's the reason why. Kristaps Porzingis has been great this year. Like, he has been really, really good. If you've watched him, like, outside of the first 20 games, I thought that, like, he was still kind of feeling it out a little bit in Washington. But from then on, it's felt like he's really come into his own in a real way. And instead of being, like, a guy that settles more often, it feels like he's being decisive. It feels like he's being aggressive and attacking. If you look at the numbers just straight up in terms of counting stats, right? He's averaging more points per game than he ever has in his career. He is doing so on a higher field goal percentage. He is doing so on the second highest 3-point percentage of his career. He has a 63 true shooting percentage right now. Look, you can parse and you can say like he's not, you know, the best defensive rebounder in the world. You can parse and say that like he's not the quickest decision maker as a passer and playmaker in the world. I do just kind of think at the end of the day, though, this guy who is just like capable of being aggressive, shooting over the top of defenders, attacking, taking advantage of his size mismatch on the block, oftentimes that he's able to create in pick and roll opportunities. I really, really think that maybe enough people haven't paid attention. Kristaps has been like really, really good this year.
Yeah. I go back and forth on this one. I try not to be overly unfair. I've never really been a big Kristaps guy, for being completely honest. Like, he's been so good in 2023, to be fair. Like, he shot really well from deep. Exactly like you mentioned, I think they've been really good at utilizing him and finding him in ways that work for him. And it's kind of obviously not quite the same thing, but sort of like we talked about a little bit with J-Mac. Like, I think part of what to be a really good player who plays out of the post or has to play without, you know, being an insane like athlete gravity guy, you have to be really good at manufacturing your own way to get the ball. And I think Kristaps has been a lot better at that this year, that to his credit. They also just have, you know, I think he and Denny have started to find some synergy that's been really fun to watch. I just keep coming back to, and this is not me trying to advocate for or against the deal, but I think I just keep coming back to the health in general. And also, like, we've seen him have stretches of play like this before and then have it regress too, which is where I just don't know how to feel about it in general with him. Like, the play that he was doing putting up before the bubble, like, I legitimately thought he was an all-NBA player that 2020 season before the bubble, and obviously gets injured during the playoffs, which sucked. That obviously you never want to see that, but like, yeah, I think it was like the last 30 games he had before the bubble. He averaged what, like 30 and 10 on incredibly good efficiency. His defense was really good. I still just have never felt his defense has been quite to that level again.
I do agree with that part of it.
And that's where I think I have my biggest hang up. Like, if he was that level of defender still, I would have no question with giving him a max contract. But I think when you're talking about like a guy who has the real injury risks, who has like made some improvements in his game, but not to the level where I'm like super comfortable with it, I get where some fans are coming from. I think I end up probably just leaning back into the, I still think like having a max contract player is better than not having one. Which that seems incredibly reductive, but I think oftentimes when you move a guy like that, you just are not getting back nearly as much as it feels like, or you think it is in the moment. Because again, like that, like exactly like we're talking about with Kristaps, like with who Kristaps was at the end of his Mavs tenure to who he is now, like think about how different the value is in what he's being. Like we're talking about him as being like a guy who maybe would have gotten like 3 for 60 if he was lucky, you know, with what he was coming off the injury, to now, like, I mean, he's being talked about as a potential max guy. Again, not saying that I would give it to him, but like, I think it's just value fluctuates so much. And I think it's better to have the talented player who could maybe, you know, he's still what, only like 26, 27, which that is crazy. Yeah, he's 27.
Crazy. Yeah.
It feels weird. I was reading earlier, Bradley Beal is still only 29, which is like mind boggling to me. yeah, like I think I would understand signing him. A lot just comes back. What the hell else are they doing? I just need to know that. That's what it always comes back to with the Wizards for me.
Well, for me, it's A, I don't think he's a max guy. Like if he's signing this extension, I think that he's like opting in to this player option probably at 36, and then they're adding like maybe 2 or 3 years on it at maybe 30 a pop, right? Like if you're talking 3 years, let's say $96 million, it's not quite a max. Do you think he gets like $4,125 if he hits free agency? I don't.
I don't love it. I don't know if you would get that. I don't really know what to put the valuation at, but I think that is a. I'm trying to remember that the cap is spiking. That is like a scary number to hear about. Like I would be, I mean, happy for him, like get your money, but like I, from a front office perspective, oof, that is a lot.
Well, and so look, here's the thing. If I was the Washington Wizards, I would absolutely tear this thing down to studs, and I would have moved Porzingis to the deadline, or tried to at least, or I would move him after he opts into this player option in all likelihood in the summer. You have 1 year, 36. You could probably get something really valuable for him. I would trade Bradley Beal. I would have moved Kyle Kuzma at the deadline. Like I would be operating stratospheres differently than what the Washington Wizards and Tommy Shepard and Ted Leonsis and everyone involved there is doing. If they are going to continue down the road of Bradley Beal, this is kind of what you have to do, right? Like you just kind of have to keep him, I feel like, and pray. Like this isn't a strategy. Keeping Kristaps and praying he stays healthy and praying Bradley Beal stays healthy and doesn't have any drop off, and then giving Kyle Kuzma 4 years, $115 million or whatever they're going to have to give him. This is not a good strategy. Let me be clear about that. All of these guys, you know what that has gotten the Washington Wizards this year? It's gotten them what, like the sixth worst record in the league, something like that.
Yeah.
So I think they should be doing something entirely different. But if you are set on continuing down this road with Bradley Beal and just like playing out the string a little bit longer until you eventually do trade Bradley Beal, you do want to keep all of these guys under contract with Bradley Beal so that when you do decide to move on, you can then pivot more intelligently and like really rack up draft capital and like asset capital at that point.
Yeah. What's so hard in all this is exactly like you mentioned. I think like the idea of like, okay, well you can have KP and Brad together next year. And like, I mean, all right, even when you look in March, like they've played 14 games. KP's played 13. Brad's played 11. Kyle's only played 8 to be fair, but like, I mean, dude, they're 4-10. Like what? I think again, like it's hard for me to be extreme. Like, I mean, obviously it can be critical, but like extremely critical of Tommy when we're talking about, what ownership wants. Cause that's what the Wizards do. I think a lot of,
I agree with you. I don't put any of this on Tommy Shepard. I put a little bit of it on Tommy Shepard from like a draft evaluation perspective, like thinking Denny Avdia was a little bit better than he is offensively was I don't see that being a Ted Leonsis decision. You know what I mean?
For sure. I think what's tough too is looking like, hey, we didn't even mention Corey Kispert's been awesome. That has been really great to see. Like seeing him like, hey, we should play that guy. He's pretty good. And we drafted him high. Like that's been dope. He's really fit in. And I think he should continue to start with what they're doing. The thing is to me, like I'd almost argue that they need to trade Kuz. I think part of the problem is they can't really trade him. What they did letting it go. I kind of think that they should have. I just like the issue to me always comes back to guard play for them. Like it's just like obviously Brad is really good when he's healthy, but the problem is like he's not somebody who can carry the primary usage as a guard. Like obviously like he can do all the scoring things, but it's just the having somebody who can really set the table. Like Monty Morris has been very underwhelming this year as a starting point guard. I thought that was going to be an issue coming in. Like I liked him. It's not that he's a bad player, but
I feel like they've looked better when they've had DeLon Wright on the court. If I'm being
clear. And even then, like DeLon should not be starting in the NBA anymore. Like they just have outside of Brad and KP and a couple of guys. Like it's mostly like a hodgepodge of 6th to 10th men, and I just don't know what they're doing to improve on that, but I don't know. It's sorry. Not to make this, I'm going far and beyond.
No, we're not. I mean, it's because at the end of the day, this extension is a statement on what their plan is moving forward. So all of this is fair game. I think it's just that I feel like their plan is flawed, and you can make the case that like, oh my God, like there is such a real substantial impact on franchise health and organizational wellness by tanking and by selling all the parts for assets and everything. I guess, but like at what point does there just become like organizational apathy by nobody giving a fuck if you're chasing the eight seed every year?
I think that's the problem, man. Every fan I know for the Wizards, and I surprisingly know a large amount of Wizards fans, like they just want to be bad, honestly. Like they're tired of like the, oh, here's a 6-game stretch where we look kind of good, but oh wait, now we're shit again and everything fell apart. And look, oh, we're like, it's just, it's so draining for fans to be in that middle place. And it's not saying middle place is wrong. Like being in like that bottom tier place when they're trying to be in the middle place and saying like, oh, well, look at all these prospects that all of the teams ahead of us are going to have an opportunity to draft and build around, and not to discredit guys that they have drafted, but like to be fair too, like it puts them in a really bad spot to develop. Like it's not a great spot for, as much as like I've never really gone back and watched Denny. That was the year before I started doing draft stuff. But like this hasn't been a good place for him to develop. Like it's always been in a weird spot with him, because I think the idea was always, all right, if you really want to get more out of him, I think you needed to empower him and, you know, try and put the ball in his hands more and see what you could get out of his playmaking. Similarly to like, obviously like he's not Josh Giddey, but like similarly to what the Thunder were willing to do with him, play out your mistakes, work on your shooting, continue to develop confidence. And that hasn't been fully there in Washington.
Well, three straight years, they draft Rui Hachimura, Denny Avdia, Corey Kispert.
Yeah.
Like that is, for as good as Corey Kispert has been, that's three guys that are probably best playing either the three or the four, but actually don't have a lot of like lineup versatility. Like we talk about drafting versatile players, drafting bigger forwards, drafting bigger wings. The problem is that like Rui can't play multiple positions. Denny can, because Denny can guard, you know, almost anybody on the court. It feels like can't deal with like the biggest centers, can't deal with like the smallest guards, but like Denny's like really, really good. And then Kispert is also like basically a position locked three. Like you can't really play him at the two where you need like secondary ball handling and passing, but he's also not really big enough to play the four. So it's just that I hate everything that they've done to build this roster. It's probably the roster most unlike the roster that I would build in the NBA, I think is the way for me to explain it. And that's disappointing for Wizards fans, not to say that I'm like some fucking genius or anything, but like, I think they feel a similar way in regard to just the overall continued chase for the seven seed when the max that this organization can get is probably like the seven seed at the end of the day. Like, you'd be maxing out getting the seven seed with this roster, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd be fortunate to have a playoff series with this group, with where they're at right now and what the rest of the East is shaping up to be. And I think what is probably even more difficult and frustrating for fans, like, granted, nothing is set in stone. Like, injuries happen, unexpected things happen that break teams apart, or just they have down years. So you have teams that slide in and have those seasons where they can really go in above and beyond from what they would. But the problem is, like, you look at, okay, the young teams coming up, Orlando, Detroit. Yep. Like, obviously Detroit has had a rocky year because Cade's been out, but I believe so much more in what both those teams are doing and where they're headed.
Yep.
Toronto, I think we can still have more questions about, but I feel obviously a lot better about where they're at and what their trajectory has been.
But their questions are, do we retain Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent this offseason? If we don't, then we're in like a very questionable position. But if we do, we're very clearly ahead of the Wizards in the pecking order.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're ahead of the Wizards in the pecking order right now. Like, so it's exactly. So it's just hard to feel all that great about them. Like,
yeah.
Even the Bulls, I think I would feel a little bit better about the Bulls and their ability to at least get flexible compared to where they're at. Like, it's.
It's funny, NBA Rigged in the comments just asked again, like, oh, they just drafted Johnny in this last draft. What do you think is going to be their less than stellar based number nine pick this year? And look, like, if they end up in that number nine pick range, the player I will probably like mock to them is the player that I like the least. Like, the player that I am least enthusiastic about, because that's what their tendency is. I have Rui like in the 20s on my board. Like, I thought Denny was fine. I thought Kispert was fine. I thought that, you know, Johnny Davis, I think I had him like pretty substantially below some of the other guys they could have had a chance to draft. So, like, I don't know, man. It feels frustrating when I have to just go and like shit on this and just be like, yeah, like I can just like slot them with the guy I don't like, because I think that their way of looking at prospects seems to be fairly anachronistic, but like, it's kind of the reality at this point, right?
Yeah. I will say, like, it's been 1 year for Johnny Davis, so I don't want to go out, and he has had some nice flashes recently. But yeah, like, it's been rough. I just think, like, one of the things that honestly something I'd love to write about, like, being a prospect in the age of social media to where it's at now. Like, obviously social media's been around, but like, okay, like, over the last year or so, like, people are posting like G League lowlights and shit. Like, it's hitting like a new range. Like, being a prospect in the 2020s with where it's at, good Lord. Not for me. But yeah, it's Washington is the only thing that it feels Washington has gotten right of late is the Rose jerseys. Those things are awesome.
Those are pretty good. I do agree. Okay, Mark, you wanted to talk about Emmanuel Quickley in the sixth man of the year race. So I'll let you kind of lead off the conversation and take that where you want to take it.
Yeah. So I think first and foremost, Emmanuel Quickley has just been awesome this year. Obviously the Knicks playing incredibly good basketball. He's been a large part of that. He's started some games recently, and just been a big part of what they're doing. Like, his march has been pretty unreal. I'm pulling up the stats really quick so I don't forget. He just had a 40-point game against Houston the other night, which I don't want to discredit the 40 points. That is as close to a fake 40 points as you were going to get, given what the defense was. But in March, so he started half of his games in March, so 13 games, averaging 19.8 points per game, 4 boards, 4 assists, obviously playing incredibly, incredibly good defense. Like, he should be on a short list for all defense. I'm not sure he'll make it, but he would be up there. And he's just hitting a new verve as a shot creator and somebody who can really obviously set things up for others, but like, his ability to just – like he fits so much of what they want to do, like just kind of ping-ponging around, like, okay, I'm going to move the ball and then I'm going to move myself. And considering they're a team that really isn't running a ton of sets and it's mostly just playing, you know, for actions and trying to draw two, it's really worked well with what he's brought. And I think like the biggest thing that I want to get into with this, I don't care if a player starts games. Like, I don't think it matters, to be honest. Like, if somebody plays, let's say, okay, if somebody plays like the exact maximum they can of started games, then yeah, okay, I'll have more reason to be frustrated about that. But I think part of being a great six man is being able to fill in when there are injuries, when there are voids, and your team is still winning because of you. Like, we're talking about Emmanuel quickly started 17 games, and I think he'll end up probably by the end of the season starting at most 20. Like, I suppose you can make the case that he's bolstering his six man of the year case through his started games, but I honestly don't. Like, I think it's helped for sure, but I mean, that's part of the point too. Like, okay, the game that they beat Boston at the beginning of March and he scores 38. Like, yeah, he started that game. They went to overtime. He was awesome. That was what, like the triple overtime game? He was insanely good in that game. And they won because he was a big part of what they did. Like, so I understand to a degree the frustrations about, you know.
No, I don't.
Well, I mean, like, I get.
I do not get.
From the fan perspective of I'm upset that my guy is not winning this anymore or is not in the lead for it. Like, I get having that as a gripe, but I also just think that it's a little bit short-sighted and I just don't really agree with it. Like, IQ has been, since he had the shot really come back for him, like, he's been awesome. Like, it's honestly since before Christmas, like, he's been at that level, and we know what the defense has been the entire year. He's been a huge part of the Knicks just finding their groove and what they've done the whole year, so I can't really be bothered by some games started.
Yeah, Emmanuel quickly has played 45 games. He's averaging something like, I think it's like 17, you know, 3 and 4, 3 and 5, something like that. Yeah. He's played 32 minutes per game over his last 45 games. So that includes like most of his started games as well. You know, he's played over his last, what is this, 11 games, which also includes that, you know, 55 game or 55 minute, like triple overtime monstrosity. And like, you know, I think they did that Clippers game go into overtime or not?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
But like, he's played 34 minutes per game in that time. So he's playing two more minutes per game when he's a starter. It's not like he's bolstering his numbers by playing like crazy more minutes. He's bolstering his numbers through just like continuing to play well. I don't really see it as a situation where, oh, this is like an unfair advantage that he's gaining. Look, I think the Sixth Man of the Year award's like kind of ridiculous on its face on some level.
Yeah.
But if our goal is to just like find the best player who has contributed the most value this year, who has come off the bench for the majority of the year, I think Emmanuel quickly is like certainly in the conversation. I think Malcolm Brogdon is in the conversation. Would I pick quickly or Brogdon? I think probably quickly, because I think quickly's defense has been just way better than Brogdon's this year. This isn't to say that I think Brogdon has been like a sieve defensively or anything, but Emmanuel quickly, like Mark said, is look, probably a top 15, you know, guard defender so far this year, something along those lines. I don't know if I'd go as far as you did saying like shortlist for all defense, but certainly like in that next group for me, at the very least, like would you take him or Quentin Grimes for all defense? Mark, maybe in the,
okay, I can hear you now.
There we go.
There. Yeah. My bad. It was cutting. My internet's being shitty.
Yeah. Would you take him or Quentin Grimes for all defense so far?
I honestly, like, I love Quentin. I think Quentin's an all defense caliber player, but I would probably take IQ for all defense right now over him. Just given, especially when you're comparing minutes played too.
I think I would take Grimes, if only because Grimes tends to take on the tougher assignments. That's for the Knicks.
Point. One, I got to say though, one of my favorite things, but like IQ might be the best non-big rim contest guy. Like he always finds ways to swoop in and rotate low, even if like he'll play outside the play to do it. That's one of my favorite things about him. It's just like I love guys who find opportunities to play outside the play without obviously overextending themselves. That's just special shit. So yeah, I've loved watching that.
Well, and I feel like Dirty Dancer here in the YouTube comments brings up that Emmanuel Quickley is better at defense. He's the QB of our defense. I think that like that's a fair point as well. Like Emmanuel Quickley, it does feel like is calling out like some coverages, especially at the point of attack. Like he'll have coverages called out for him. The communication does tend to be a two-way street for him, whereas like some teams they just rely on the big or they rely on like a backline defender. Like I do think that Quickley is like pretty involved in making sure that the defense is operating in the way it's supposed to, at least in terms of communication. So I understand that to some extent as well. I just feel like, you know, maybe I'm overrating like on ball defense. Like I saw our good friend Nikias Duncan brought up like four words for all defense earlier this year. And he didn't even mention like Dylan Brooks. And if you look at like Dylan Brooks's, like the stats of the guys that Dylan Brooks guards, he tends to hold them to under 40% from the field, like just straight up. And like, it's a lot of chicanery and bullshit. And I do not enjoy watching it for the most part, but at the same token, like he's been really good on defense, and all defense this year is just kind of a bloodbath. It feels like in terms of trying to determine who the best players are. But I don't know, man. It's interesting, and maybe we should talk about Malcolm Brogdon now, because Malcolm Brogdon is the contender next to Emmanuel Quickley for Sixth Man of the Year. Who would you take between those two?
Oh, I think right now, like gun to my head, I think I would say Brogdon still. Like Brogdon, like to sing his praises, like his consistency all year has been so huge. Like, I know that the Celtics have obviously not been as good as they were at the beginning of the year. I don't think that has anything to do with him. He's been incredible to me still and what he's done as a bench player for them. And I'd argue, like, that he's been the best bench player in the NBA the entire year. That's where I would go. I think over the last couple months, I think Quickley, with what he's done, finding that extra gear offensively, and the way that he's won them games of late, I think that that has pushed him up quite a bit for me. But I think still looking at the, you know, top down with how good they were early on in the year too. And to be fair, like the Celtics have fallen to be more like a slightly above 500 team over the last couple months, whereas the Knicks have been playing above that. So it's like there is a little bit of tit for tat with that. And I would need to parse that out more in looking at that moving forward and like making a concrete decision. But I think I would still have Brogdon edging out IQ just slightly, but I think IQ would be pretty easily second for me right now.
I just feel like when I watch the two play that Emmanuel Quickley is a lot more integral to his team's success than Malcolm Brogdon is. And this isn't like a slight at Malcolm Brogdon. Like the Celtics are just like better than the Knicks are, and he doesn't need to take up as much usage, doesn't need to take up as critical a role defensively as Quickley does. But I feel like Emmanuel Quickley is like often driving like very positive play for the Knicks. Whereas with Brogdon, he'll like quarterback the second unit like a decent amount of the time, but it's not quite as stark as it is with Clarkson, just like driving positive play game after game, it feels like.
Yeah, no, that's a really fair point. I think that's where it's where you get dicey, but I think again it speaks to what IQ's doing to have him be somebody who gets all the way up to that from what he was at the beginning of the year, you know. And honestly, maybe I just factor in a little bit too much the winning aspect. Like, not that obviously, like again, the Knicks have been winning, but like the Boston, it feels like so far removed from what they were doing at the beginning of the season, which. I mean, sneakily, they've still been really solid since after the trade deadline. And even just, you know, since the All-Star game in general. I don't know. I tend to just like lean into winning a little bit more and who's been like the most impactful bench player on like the one of the best teams. And perhaps that's a flawed way to look at it, but I think that's just how I lean right now.
It's interesting. I'm going to pull up the numbers real quick on Brogdon. So Malcolm Brogdon's on the court. The Celtics are plus 3.5 this year. When Emmanuel Quickley is on the court, the Knicks are...
It's going to be plus a million.
Plus 5.6.
Oh, wow, that's a lot lower than I expected.
So they're actually, like, with Emmanuel Quickley on the court, the Knicks are a better team than what the Celtics are with Malcolm Brogdon. And then, like, you would think that it would be the opposite just because the Celtics have drastically better players than the Knicks on some level, right?
Yeah, no, for sure.
Okay. This makes me feel better about Emmanuel Quickley as a sixth man of the year candidate than I was going into this conversation. But let's move on, because sixth man of the year is an award that I'm like a little bit less interested in. Let's talk about the Lakers. We're going to close on the Lakers here. The Lakers are in a strange place, I guess I would say. They are sitting at 37 and 38. It feels like they have played much better, certainly, in recent weeks.
Basically, well, the bar was low, but yeah.
The bar was low. Basically, since they went out and they acquired like real players, it's been much easier for them to be good. I believe that they are something like 12 and 7 in their last 19 games, which is an absolutely terrific rate. Yeah, I mean, outside of that Bulls game on Sunday, which was just like super weird, and I don't know how to react to it. This is a team that's beaten the Thunder. They've beaten the Suns. They've beaten the Pelicans. Like, they beat the Raptors, Grizzlies, Warriors. It feels like they're rolling, and then they have these random bullshit games where they lose to Chicago and they lose to who did they lose to? Someone hysterical. They lost to the Rockets is who it was. And it's just like, wait, what's happening here, guys? Like, I get that Anthony Davis like did not play, but you can't lose to the Rockets. Like, you have like actual adults.
Yeah. They're interesting. Like, I think I keep coming to they're a solid team. Obviously, you know, LeBron is coming back now. Came off the bench for the second time in his career. So like, you can't discount LeBron. I honestly feel like, to an extent, like at large, like, we're like, dude, it's still LeBron. Like, it's not like that level of LeBron, but like, there's been the, oh, well, Austin Reeves has been playing so well, do you really need to bring him back? And I'm like, let's be for fucking real here, man. Like, come on.
No, you do need to bring him back. That's my take. Hot take. LeBron James,
hot take. LeBron James should probably be playing for the Lakers. But I still just think that I end up leaning on this team being more of maybe frisky in the first round than being a real contender. And maybe they really shock me and prove me wrong and have a lot more than I think. But I still just look at this. And as much as I have really liked D'Lo, I think D'Lo and Anthony Davis have looked so good together. I've really loved watching that two-man game develop. I think overall D'Lo has just fit in so well with what they want and what they're trying to do. I mean, Austin Reeves has been very fun to watch. The foul drawing, to be fair, like, I think some of the foul drawing questioning has been a little bit much. Like, he was that's what he did at Oklahoma, was like be really weird in how he got to the rim and get a ton of freaking fouls. And I think it's been a little bit much, and I don't expect it to continue, but like, there's a lot of good stuff going on in this roster, but it's still just really flawed. And I don't think that it's as simple as just we'll get to the playoffs and it's cool. Like, the biggest thing that they have going for them with me is that, I mean, Anthony Davis has been legitimately incredible. He's been so good.
Yeah.
He's been incredibly aggressive. They've done a really good job of getting him close to the rim, which, that's, believe it or not, that's where you want Anthony Davis. Like, okay, his post-ups start from 8 to 10 feet away instead of 14 to 15, which is the bad place for him. When you can get him off of a cross screen and then rip and go, like, that's, it just feels like found money. And I think part of, to be fair, like, I think Darvin Ham got a little bit too much shit for early in the year with what the offense was, because just being blunt, like, that, I still will lean on that. I think that roster is just so bad with what it was coming into the year. Like, I get it. And maybe I'm being too forgiving, but compared to what it is now, like,
to me, it was more the defense than the offense.
Yeah,
he was running out some lineups where like half of their minutes were like multiple guys that were 6'1" or shorter on the court. Like, you just can't live like that in the NBA.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's just they were just, again, like kind of like we talked a little bit about with the Wolves, they're just in such a weird spot of what they could actually construct and put together that could, like, it's like trying to, okay, well, we want to be able to, we can't score. All right, let's put out a lineup that can score. Okay, well, now we can't defend. Oh, shit, well, let's put out a lineup that can defend. Well, now we can't do both. Okay, well, let's try it. We don't have the guys to put it out to put both. That's how I felt watching them earlier this year. Obviously, it's different now. I think that they're a lot more capable of doing what they want to do with that group. I still just think, like, again, like they're the big depth is pretty blah for me. Even if Mo Bamba was healthy, I'd be concerned about that, just given what he has been. Rui is just like, I mean, he was good to start, and now he's kind of like a little bit phased out of the rotation. Not that it's a bad thing, but I think, like, that's, again, you're talking about what the quality of the roster is right now. And Austin Reeves is like your fourth best player. I don't know. I just like, to be fair, like, we are a Malik Beasley hot streak away from their offense going absolutely nuclear, but I can't really get there.
You're a hater. Right, that's now. What it is. You're Mark correct. Schindler. You're a hater of all people.
If I come across any of y'all Lakers fans that are like being like this in Malik Beasley dimensions on Instagram for
that's gross. Birthday, yeah, don't do that shit.
I'll end you.
Don't do that shit.
Disgusting, man. Like, come on. Also, that just proves that you've never watched Malik Beasley play basketball before, because this is what he does, man.
Like, he goes through hot
streaks. The worst month possible, and then the next month he's incredible. So it's like, you know, just get over it.
So Anthony Davis, over his last 24 games, averaging 24 points, 13 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.8 blocks, shooting 53% from the field. He looks like an all-NBA player right now. LeBron James just came back off the bench for the second time in his career on Sunday in that weirdo loss to the Bulls. I would imagine that LeBron James will look something like an all-NBA-ish player at the end of the day. Austin Reeves, I think, is pretty real, to the point where, I mean, I'll ask you this question, knowing that he is Arenas rule constrained. What does his contract look like? Does he get the full mid-level, or does someone Arenas rule him and try and go over that to get him?
I think it's too small of a sample size for someone to go way over that with me.
Yeah.
Like, I like what he's doing, but I think if you asked me, like, you know, 3 years ago or something, I'd be like, oh yeah, dude, somebody's going to go over for him. But then I think about, like, okay, well, how many guys can I pull up that have had, and this is not trying to discount what he's doing. I agree with you that I think this is pretty real to an extent, but also, like, how many guys have we had just go, like, put together an absurd 3 or 4 weeks?
Well, it's a 20 game sample. He's averaging 16 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists versus only 2 turnovers, 56% from the field, 42% from 3, 82% from the line over 20. If he does this in the playoffs, I think someone's given him like 480. Or something like wild.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I don't know if I would be the one to do it. But yeah, no, I think that's possible.
I mean, there's no way he gets under the full mid-level, I feel like. Like, that's his floor to me at this point. Or, like, if he decides to go, like, 3-year full mid-level kind of deal where it's he wants to try and hit free agency. Obviously, he's a little bit older for a second year player. Like, okay, I want to try and re-hit free agency in my 5th year to be able to try and, like, really extend this thing out. He and the folks in his camp are going to have to figure out exactly the timings of how they want to manage this contract negotiation and the contract situation. But I will say, I think he's like a legitimate starter for this team in a way that they needed.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
D'Angelo Russell playing off of guys who can handle the ball, so D'Angelo Russell can just go out there and hoop, is the way that D'Angelo Russell plays best. Like you have Austin Reeves who can play like almost like the Kyle Anderson role that he was playing in Minnesota. And then you have LeBron James who's like able to play like as a true point. I don't know, man. Like I feel like that's a dangerous foursome. And then you can have Jared Vanderbilt out there if you need size and defense. You can have Malik Beasley out there if you need floor spacing. Like Troy Brown has been pretty useful. I don't know. Like I feel like this is a very dangerous team, Mark. I think I would pick them. This is going to sound very dumb. I'm aware when the Nuggets sweep them or like beat them in five games, I think I would pick them against the Nuggets right now in a playoff series.
I would not, but I get what you're saying. I just don't have nearly that level of confidence in this team. Not that the Nuggets have been all that much better.
If LeBron is healthy, I want to caveat that. Like if LeBron is playing and like Anthony Davis is playing, full strength Lakers, full strength Nuggets, I think I would take the Lakers in a series.
Yeah, I don't agree, but I understand what you're saying for sure. Like, yeah.
You're just like, get out of here. You're
no, I'm not saying get out of here. I just like I can't get there. Like I'm not there. But yeah, I do think that it would be God, that would be the Twitter would be insane for sure. With that.
I don't think I want that. Do you want that?
No, I don't really want that as a first round series. I still think like I mean they have to get there. Like I'm not confident that the Lakers are not a playing team. Like to be fair, the Pels have an absolute just slaughterhouse last six games. Like they play Denver and then they play the Clippers and then they play Sacramento and then they play Memphis and they play the Knicks and then they play Minnesota. So it's like Jesus Christ. But part of what's fun is this, I mean, jockeying for the final position is going to go on for until the last day. Like we could have very much one of those settings where like, the Denver Wolves game from what year was that? Was that 2017-18? Was it 18-19? I feel old.
It would be the Denver Wolves game would be 18, I believe.
Yeah, because that was fun. And we're going to have that again this year. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So just for reference on the Lakers' final seven games, it is Chicago on the road, which is occurring, you know, in the next hour or 2 hours or so. Minnesota on the road, which is a tough game, as we've talked about. Houston on the road, which they should win. Utah on the road, which I don't know. Do you think Utah might start to like kind of sit a couple people here and there? Like not impossible, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely possible.
The Clippers on the road, which is like a critical game for both of those teams. Phoenix at home, and then Utah on the at home. So, like, you could conceivably say that, like, Chicago, both Utah games, if Utah starts to sit people, and then Houston, that's like four wins. And then if they can get one or two of those other games, you actually might be sitting in a place where you are either the seven seed or, like, lo and behold, you've made the playoffs. I think they probably don't make the playoffs just off the rip. I think they are going to end up being a play-in team. I think they're going to be either the seven or the eight seed. They're going to get the double chance in the play-in. And I think that at that point, you know, whether or not they end up at seven or eight is a question.
Yeah, no, most definitely.
So, yeah, but look, like, I'm in on the Austin Reeves thing. I think he's been terrific. He's the exact kind of ball mover, shooter, everything that this team needs because he's also pretty solid defensively. If they can run out a lineup of Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, Jared Vanderbilt, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, that's a big lineup. That's a versatile lineup defensively. That is a tough lineup that's going to rebound well. That is it's just an enormous lineup that I think causes pressure points in mismatch opportunities for LeBron James potentially. And I don't know. Like I feel like that's not a lineup that I would want to play in the playoffs, just straight up.
Yeah, I think part of what's fun too, like, I mean, there's a lot of lineups I don't want to play in the playoffs. But yeah, no, I agree.
But like this duo, like LeBron and Anthony Davis, that is still what ranking is that duo if those two are playing well? It might be the best duo outside of maybe Tatum and Brown.
I am trying.
And it might be better than those two. Like I'd be really willing to hear a case for that.
For what I say, man, this is tough. I'm looking up and down right now because I want to make sure I choose my words carefully.
I mean, like KD and Devin is probably better.
Yeah, I think KD and Devin and Embiid Harden for me.
Yeah, like I think those are both reasonable takes for what it's worth. Like you're not coming out here with like Ja and Jaren, you know. Yeah. Like I think that saying both of those two teams have better combos, I think that's like pretty reasonable. But also, you know, just like with LeBron and Anthony Davis, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant obviously have not played a lot together this season. So we will see. It's going to be interesting. Mark, do you have any strong takes you need to get off your chest before we get out of here?
I do not think I do right now, to be completely honest, which is fine by me.
Have you watched any movies?
Dude, honestly, no. I've been watching some TV. That's really about it. I haven't really had time to watch any movies lately. I wish I did.
Are you caught up on Succession?
I do not watch Succession. I need to. I watched like the first 4 or 5 episodes a year ago, and I just never – I don't remember what I had come up in the middle, but I didn't watch it. I might try and do that eventually, but no, I've been watching reality TV lately. Love is Blind season 4 just came out. That's where I'm at right now. It's something I just like, I can turn on and just like do shit in the background. You guys should see the way Sam is looking at me right now. But yeah, that is what, that is literally all I've been watching recently, which tells you I have not been watching much either.
Yeah. No, you need to watch Succession, Mark. Please, for the love of God, watch Succession. Yeah, look, no, outside of TV, I've not watched a crazy amount of movies recently. I have been reading a decent amount. I did read the John Wick oral history book that just came out. That was pretty fun. I am in the middle of Unscripted, which is the like Sumner Redstone succession plan nonfiction book that just got released within the last like few months. That thing is wild, Mark. I can't emphasize enough to you how wild that thing got at the end for Sumner Redstone and for CBS and Viacom and everything. I would suggest everybody read that book. What else do I have? Yeah, I think that's it. Succession rules. I'm super excited to be down here in Houston. Excited to see some friends. At some point, podcast listeners will get to see an image of Matt Penny and I being,
ooh, oh yeah,
one of us being a foot taller than the other, and that person is not me. It's going to be great. I'm super excited to be down here. It's going to be super fun. Got some fun games. Mark, Connecticut versus Miami. Who wins?
Oh man, that's so tough. I want to take Miami. I think UConn's still the best team in the field, but I really have a lot of faith in Miami's guard play being too much for them. That's been their biggest struggle this year for UConn, is containing guards who can get hot and score at three levels. I love it. So I will take Miami. Who else? What's the other side? I'm so tired. What is the other side?
Florida Atlantic and San Diego State.
Jesus Christ. That's going to be a war. I will take Florida Atlantic because I have faith in Florida Atlantic to score at all. So, yeah, I will take Florida Atlantic. San Diego, I mean, like, to be fair, too, like, San Diego State can just do exactly what they did against Alabama, and it can be absolutely nasty. It's going to, like, I don't want to just make it up to this. It will depend how the refs call it. Like, yeah, the refs totally really let San Diego State play physically. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but that worked for them incredibly well in winning the game against Alabama. If the refs call it differently, I think they're really going to struggle to beat FAU because I love their offense. I love the way that they play. Yeah. And that's the team that's going to be very hard to contain if they're not able to play as physically as they're allowed to play sometimes.
Completely agree. I think I do lean FAU in that game. And then in the other game, I am glad that you said Miami, because I think this game is closer than what other people have said. at the end of the day, I am picking Connecticut, if only because of the interior and the rebounding edge that I think they're going to have. Norchad Omier is physical and tough.
Love watching that dude play. Yeah, but
and
having
super smart. Yeah, he's just also 6'7", and he's going to have problems with Sanogo, and he's definitely going to have problems with Donovan Clingan when that happens. So I just find it very hard to believe that those teams are – that Miami team is going to be able to hold its own on the glass in the way that they have to against Connecticut.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing for me with them is obviously like we just mentioned, they can't have a bad Nigel Pack game. They can't have a bad Isaiah Wong game. As much as Isaiah Wong scored in the second half, like I thought that was a really rough game for him process wise against Texas. Like a lot of tunnel vision, a lot of just kind of forcing things. It worked at times, but I don't think that can happen against UConn. But I mean, I mean, when their defense is flying around, I don't know. Regardless, I think it should be a really fun game. It's a fun stylistic matchup.
It's a really fun stylistic matchup. Mark, do you want to take a victory lap on Jordan Miller very briefly?
No, I don't need to right now. I love Jordan Miller. I think I will let the play do the talking. He's so fun to watch, man. What a hell of a player. I wish that I just been willing to, you know, say what I felt about him earlier.
Oh, you uncorked it. You did it before the 20 for 20 game.
I wish that I'd done it like before the tournament is my point. But yeah. It's been cool to see him kind of get some notoriety and blow up a little bit. And he's killing it, man. He's been really fun.
Yeah. I'm still a little bit more skeptical on him than you are just because of the shot.
That's fair.
And I need to see him like confidently knock down and like rep out threes. I'm actually like really excited to be at the game and then literally just like be there for pregame and see him like rep out threes, basically, just so I can like understand a little bit better how that is going to work as he moves back to the NBA 3-point line. But I'm intrigued to the point where I think he probably has a very good chance to get drafted at the very least.
Yeah. No, definitely.
And yeah, he's a very real player. Okay. Mark, tell the people where they can find your work. Tell the people what's going on.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at MG_Schindler. I just dropped something on Jaden McDaniels over at Dime. That is my pinned tweet that I recommend checking out and reading, especially in light of what we talked about today. Always happy to be here, always enjoying talking hoops, and hope that you are able to get some sleep at some point, because I can imagine it has been quite a few days for you.
Yeah, you know, I think I wrote something like 8,000 words on these plane rides, and then I also read a good portion of this book and watched a couple movies and tried to sleep. I've never slept for... So I've taken this, you know, trans-Pacific flight quite often at this point now. And I slept for like 8 hours on this flight this time.
Yeah.
And I've never done that before. And I feel like my body is so worn down from like all of the season at this point that it was just telling me, no, you need to like use this time where nobody can reach you, where you can just like sleep and not worry about anything. So I dropped a mock draft. I went up in the air over the Pacific where nobody could reach me and woke up with, I think it was like 67 text messages. And I think it was like 72 emails or something insane.
72 emails. Jesus Christ. I would lose my mind.
It was a lot. Yeah.
Now I think about it. If I wasn't checking my phone every 20 minutes, I would. Yeah. Oh God, that gives me nightmares just thinking about that.
we got to get you on a trans-Pacific flight. That's it. Like, it's the point is that it's where nobody can reach you. Like, nothing can be reached at that point. And you have to watch movies or sleep or do something else. I worked, but like, you can't be on the internet, and it's glorious. Like, it's absolutely amazing for your mental health. I will say that.
Well, I might have to get on that plan.
Yeah, literally, don't even come visit Australia. Just get on the plane. That's it.
Just keep going back around and forth. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you'll get like an hour on the phone every time like that you land, and then you'll just jump back up in. It'll be a really good cleanser for you. from getting off the internet. All right. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. I have a mock draft up that you can go read. I have best prospects of the Final Four up. And then hopefully tomorrow I will have the first edition of Transfer Rankings up with CJ Moore. Keep it locked there for more. We will be back probably on Friday with something else that I will talk about. I don't know if it'll be NBA or college yet. We will see. And yeah, that's all I've got. Until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.